They are the first and best team of mystery men ever to assemble for the cause of justice. The heroes that have been part of their ranks are legendary. They fight for America and for democracy, and yet no one has devoted a podcast to their exploits. Until now. Unfortunately, it's hosted by these guys.
I don't care what Julius Schwartz says. Yeah, League sounds like a baseball team. I hate baseball. So there you go. First F-bomb of the show.
How did you beat me to the first F-bomb of the show?
Scott Gardner and Michael Bailey present Tales of the Justice Society of America. Fridays at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
Excelsior Spider-Man fans, welcome to another spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs Podcast. Of course, I am your spectacular host, Thomas Mattis, and of course I'm here with my partner in crime, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, as you can see, Donna Mark is thrilled. Tonight we'll be covering episode 9. Of the Spectacular Spider-Man animation series entitled Uncertainty Principles. Now, for those who may be listening for the first time, just in case, if you don't know by what we've already just said, we are dedicated to reviewing every episode of what we think is, what was the best superhero animation series on television, that being Spectacular Spider-Man. And as I said, tonight we're up to episode 9. We did not get any iTunes or emails. We're still waiting, guys, that you can send them in. But we did get a question in the Ask a Question thread on our comic forums. Excuse me. This is another question from SpiderPool279. He writes, "Hey, Don and Tom, I'm going to be your regular write-in. Aren't you ecstatic, Tom?" I'm absolutely thrilled.
Well, I'm happy. I don't know what your cute thing is, but I'm happy to have somebody who's confirmed to listen to us every single time. So it's great.
So enjoy the torture.
Oh yes.
Either way, for a more serious question, since Spec Spidey is pretty much canceled, what does this mean for the show?
It's canceled.
Will you guys continue?
He says, "What does it mean for the show?" And it's canceled, so.
Let me finish. Will you guys continue past episode 26? He's not talking about that show, he's talking about our show.
Okay.
So he's asking, will we continue past episode 26? Will you guys jump from Spec to Ultimate? Will Fox ever stop canceling Joss Whedon shows? All this and more on the Spectacular Webs Podcast. Well, yeah, the show is... Did Sony ever officially come out and say it's canceled?
Not explicitly, but you know, I'm in the mindset that it's pretty much done.
I mean, I know a lot of people are saying it, but I would tell SpiderPool to check out our special bulletin that we released, in which we talked about this. But day after we did that episode, it sort of got revealed by against by Joe Quesada, which would have been nice if Tom Brevoort and his little hissy fit would have told us, but that. Apparently, it's on Sony's end to whether a third so on season gets made. So, until we hear anything from Sony, we really can't say that it's absolutely canceled. Yes, there's a lot of writing on the wall. Yes, there is a thing of, in reality, yeah, it's probably canceled. But until Sony says so, we really don't know. It's not like they're Fox.
It's interesting that Quesada came out and said that, because I remember you blaming it on pre-work Quesada for the cancellation.
Well, because at the time, our information was that, they made the decisions. And so for them to then say, no, it's really not us, we don't make decisions at Sony, okay, so we'll wait for Sony to say something. We're probably not going to have just 26 episodes, especially if you already include the special bulletin and intro episode. But,
I would assume, would you think it's too presumptuous to assume that we possibly may even have like a wrap-up episode after the series is done?
A wrap-up, and we have some things up our sleeves that we may be hopeful. I mean, we plan on having interviews. We'd like to get Greg Wiseman and Josh Keaton and maybe some of the other voice actors to talk about their roles on the series. Other than that, I mean, I don't think, because we haven't seen Ultimate yet, we don't know what to make of it. So we can't sit here and say that, yeah, we'll jump from Spec to Ultimate. If there's enough of fans out there that want us to start covering Ultimate, we'll cover it. As far as Fox, if they'll stop canceling Josh Whedon shows, we have no answer for you. I don't watch his shows to begin with, so I'm really indifferent to it.
Yeah, nothing against Josh Whedon. I just happen to not watch his shows.
So. Okay, I like Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog.
I'm not checking it out yet, but it's one of those things where I'll see if I come across it.
I do like the song On the Rise. Let's move on. Don, I do believe you have the recap up and ready.
Ready is the word. Yes, this episode is The Uncertainty Principle. It features, we have the return of the Green Goblin. This episode begins on Halloween night, as Spider-Man is wondering where the Green Goblin is and kind of taking it easy. All eyes are on Colonel John Jameson's shuttle outside space as they are bombarded by a gang of asteroids. As the asteroids kind of complicate matters and make it wonder whether he's going to come back alive, Hammerhead is riding his limousine one day where he's attacked.
I hate to cut you off, but do these asteroids make the sound bleep, 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 bleep?
No, they don't.
Yes, I just did an Atari 2600 reference. You're welcome.
Showing your age there, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm proud of it, too.
Hammerhead is being, he's riding his limousine one day, and Green Goblin comes out of nowhere and basically kidnaps him and threatens him, saying that, Hammerhead works with the big man, he's loyal to him, but, that things are going to change. As the day goes on and the children at Midtown High are watching the space shuttle in space trying to see if he can come back, Gwen notices Harry walking by and he pretty much out and out says, I'm taking this serum called Globulin Green and it's making me feel great. Everything is wonderful and stay in my way. As he does that, as Peter goes walking by, so Gwen gives her a classic look and guilts Peter into talking to him. Oh yes, you love that, don't you?
Yeah, it makes me laugh. Because I know how he feels in that type of situation of getting blamed for somebody else's mistakes. But we're not going to talk about that version.
Wait, not you, Don.
Yeah.
As Peter is swinging along trying to find Harry, Goblin accosts Tombstone, pretty much says he has Hammerhead, and says that Hammerhead has a certain jump drive which could out all of Lincoln's activities and out him as the big man, a.k.a. Tombstone. So he tells Hammerhead, or God bless, he tells Tombstone where to be and flies away as Spider-Man sees them. They have a little bit of a scuffle, and Goblin pretty much says, hey, show up here at this certain time and, you'll have all you need to get the goods on the big man. With that, and that ends up being Halloween night. Spider-Man follows him and thinks he figured out his true identity when he tracks him down to the Osborn's penthouse and sees Norman Osborn coming up a secret corridor. What he doesn't see is Harry coming. Well, he sees Harry come in, but he doesn't see Harry coming down and drink some more Globulin Green and have an evil look on his face, so I wonder what that could mean for Harry. That night on Halloween, everybody's showing up between Mary Jane is dressed as a vampire. Liz is dressed as a pirate, and the jocks, the football players, are dressed as the cheerleaders, which was a callback to the Fall Forum episode.
Sally's a fairy.
Sally's who? Oh no, I thought she was like a genie or something. Okay, let's see. Where was I?
You were at the costumes.
Right. Sally's something. We don't know whether she's a genie or a fairy. Mary Jane's, I almost said Vampirella. She's a vampire, basically. Liz is a pirate. Gwen is nothing because she's a nerd. She can't find a costume.
You've been wanting to do that for a couple episodes, haven't you?
Well, you know, I'll let you rant on Mary Jane. So, where's my girl comes in and dresses up the pirate, and I'm like, arr. But, we're not going to come on that, are we? And a good scene, Peter shows up as Spider-Man, funny enough. While this is going on, John Jameson actually makes it through the re-entry into the atmosphere and lands in, the shuttle lands safely, and as Peter is congratulating Jameson, he gives him the pictures of Spider-Man and Green Goblin. Jameson says, forget that, his son is the real news, and, you know, Spider-Man's old news, and this actually gets come back later on. While this is going on, curiously, as Norman Osborn is making his rounds at Oscorp, the Green Goblin comes by and starts, you know, stealing stuff, which causes him to laugh. Well, I wonder why. He shoots one of his sparkler guns in the air, which pretty much is a signal for Spider-Man to jump into action, as well as Tombstone. They are led to this warehouse or this refinery where there's like a lot of machinery and molten lava. Never mind. Basically, Hammerhead is being held over a vat of molten lava for one reason or another. And a big climactic fight ensues, which ends with Tombstone saving Hammerhead and Spider-Man and Goblin fighting in midair. It's actually a really cool fight. Spider-Man actually manages to throw one of the pumpkin bombs back at the Goblin. So Goblin appears injured and flies away. Spider-Man follows him, and they land at the Osborn penthouse where the Goblin is revealed to be none other than Harry Osborn. Sacre bleu! As this is going on, Norman Osborn walks in, so Peter's suspicions. Yes.
It's Harry Osborn? I thought for sure it was going to be Sally Adler.
Yeah, sorry, Josh, you were kind of wrong on that. I don't know why I thought it was that Sally, too.
Josh lied to me!
Oh my god, Spider-Man! He can do much better than I can. Basically, they try to reason that because Harry's been addicted to the Globulin Green, his mind has been warped, and since he heard Hammerhead threatening Norman Osborn, he decided to take on his affairs himself. This doesn't really add up for Spider-Man, but he decides to buy it, and he wants, because Harry's his best friend, he decides to let him go, and so Norman can take him out of the country so he can get some psychiatric help. The episode ends with the Daily Globe outselling the Daily Bugle 2-1 because they covered because Peter sold the pictures of Spider-Man and the Green Goblin to them, and the astronaut story was pretty much a non-seller. So Jameson grits his teeth and says, you know, if they want Spider-Man, they're getting Spider-Man. Peter shows up at school the next day, and as he sees Mary Jane, who's now goes to the school with them, Gwen informs him that Norman took Harry out of the country so he can get the help he needs. So Peter is left wondering, this is an happy ending, right? And that's, I should say, at the very end, we see some residue of the outer space flight where a black ooze is stuck on the shuttle and starts flying around. What does that mean? We shall find out.
Which, John Jameson says, I'm glad to be back on a place where it's safe. Dump, bump, bump.
So, the uncertainty principle, Thomas.
Alrighty then. Yes, that's my best mask impression.
Somebody stop me.
As we usually do, we'll go music, animation, and story. So, really only have one thing to talk about music-wise. It's the Goblin Spidey fight music.
You talk about that because I didn't notice it.
Well, you know, it had it, you know, as we talked before, a lot of times a lot of these villains have their own fight themes, and this one was noted. It was different from the fight theme that was in episode 7. This really seemed more like a rock track to it, or at least a rock version to it. There were certain chords that, unfortunately, I can't remember it off the top of my head, even though I only watched the episode like 2 hours ago, because the action itself probably kept me more entertained, that it was hard to notice the music. I really had to listen for it. But for what I heard, it was a really good track. Let's talk about animation. Let's first talk about, I don't know if you felt this, but it really felt like you were web-slinging alongside Spider-Man through a lot of the chase scenes, especially the one where they were sort of, like, going around the smokestacks.
I didn't feel like it was, I kind of felt the same way, but I felt it differently. I thought there was a very big video game feel to it, especially with the obstacles of him swinging over, like the machinery and the lava and everything, and especially when he drops that whole trap door at the top full of pumpkin bombs. I thought that looks really cool. I was talking about
after that, where they're outside of the factory and he's web slinging around the smokestacks, sort of going in, like he's going around and then around them, sort of like how skeeters do a slalom. That's what he was doing. He was swallowing the smokestacks.
He was swallowing the smokestacks?
Do you know the skiing event Slalom? Or Swall? I can't speak tonight. I apologize, folks. S-A-L-O-E-M. Slalom.
I'm afraid I don't. Apologize to the people. Apologize, right?
Yeah.
I do see what you're saying. It was good animation.
Where they're weaving through the poles.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he's doing the same thing with the smokestack. That's the what I'm talking about.
Well, if you feel like the same way Thomas feels, write in and find out.
But let's talk about the design of the refinery. That's really the only new location. Well, there is the Halloween party, but I think we've been there before. It's just not been decorated like that. So the refinery is really the only new place we've been introduced to.
Yeah, it was cool. I a question though, like, because I've never worked in a refinery. What's up with the? I'm sure someone could write and let us know. What is up with the lava? It's kind of like convenient. That's why I said it was more like a video game, because there's a lot of nonsensical things with it.
Heated metal. It was obviously a metal refinery of some kind where metal is melted down and then changed into certain objects. It looks to me maybe it was a sort of steel factory of some kind, where they make steel beams and tubes and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, it was nice. It was nice lighting because there's a lot of reds and oranges and brightness around there, so I thought it was pretty cool.
Yes, folks, I said tubes. Just don't tell George Carlin. French number three. you'd never heard that joke from George Carlin?
You think I have?
I'm just asking if you have.
I'm afraid I have not.
About the country, everybody says the country is going down the tubes. What effing tubes? And where? I'm just surprised you haven't heard of George Carlin.
I've heard of George Carlin, but I've never heard that joke.
Let's actually, we have one more thing to talk about the animation. Let's talk about the Halloween costume, since we're really pressing for something to talk about.
Well, okay, now that I can, because I did, at one point, I paused to see, I mean, obviously there's, you know, right up front.
She was don't say her name!
What? Oh, God, why? Why not? Oh, Jesus, don't, why? You better give me a good reason besides what I'm thinking.
We just have to save her till we talk about the end, because it ruins the story.
Oh, okay, yeah, there's thank God. There's this masked figure walking around with a sack, which reminds me of some character I may have read in the comic or may not. I don't know. But besides that, this is I kind of neglected to say until this point. Have you noticed, like, the little girl in the opening, like, kind of pops up everywhere?
No.
The girl that when the song's like, ah, and like, they get on the roof of the car, like the little sunroof thing, the little girl and her brother, like, pop out. She appears all the time, and then in this episode, she was just as a little Spider-Man with painted eyes.
Oh, okay. I'll have to go back and check that out. That's very interesting to find.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was talking about Halloween costumes, I was mainly talking about the main cast. You had Liz as a pirate.
Oh, yes.
Go ahead. Go, Goo Goo.
She says, arr, matey. I was like, oh, that's cute. Mm-hmm. And then you had Mary Jane as a vampire. This is the testosterone podcast.
Yeah. You had Liz Allen apparently as a fairy, and then you had
Sally.
Or Sally, or...
I said a genie, but hey. I mean, she's...
Thank you, folks! Good night.
Annoying. She's the most annoying. I mean, she's like, you haven't commented to me on my costume yet, Randy.
And of course, we're thinking of Randy. He had all the Flash. Apparently, when Flash lost the bet, the entire football team lost the bet.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. He was the one who made a bet with Peter, so he drags all of his cohorts. He drags everybody.
Yeah.
You know, if I suffer, I'm not suffering alone. Did you notice when he was hitting on Mary Jane and she pushed him away, you could hear the squeaks of his pom-poms?
Yeah, I did notice that. But even better, which I liked, when Peter falls down, and of course, which, by the way, it's to an extent somewhat of a brilliant idea that he just drops down, he has no choice, I'm like, my costume!
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. I did like that. He's like, she's like, Peter? And he's like, just yanks the mask off. How do you like it?
And then he goes, and Gwen, Mary Jane, and Liz are all giving him goo-goo eyes, and it's like, yeah. It's less like, you've gotta be kidding me.
There's nothing like Spider-Man.
And I'm like, yes, thank you. It's so good to see Peter sometimes put Flash in his place.
Surrounded by all the women. Yes.
Yeah.
That actually kind of reminded me, when I saw that today, and I was kind of an idiot and thought, has Flash ever chosen with Spider-Man in this cartoon? And like, actually, yes, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah, that's sort of spoiling things.
That's not spoiling
thank
that much.
Thank you, Don. You ruined the entire podcast for future episodes!
Yeah, sure I have.
Let's move on to the story. Let's talk about the triple threat match that was Spider-Man, Tombstone, and Goblin. And right off the bat, I have to say that I love the use, but I like all sort of one of the opening lines of the start of the fight, where Tombstone is walking into the refinery and Spidey meets him like, hey, so Gobbly offered you your secret toy surprise too? Trap. So trap? Trap. I figured. Race inside!
Yeah, that was a good quip.
I mean, regardless of the fact that no more than three episodes ago they were about ready to tear each other's heads off.
Yeah, they've actually kind of like have a pretty, pretty certain specific relationship after all this time.
Yeah. I mean, this is like this, and this is actually the second time that, they're sort of aligning.
Yeah, and it's against Goblin too, in a way.
Yeah.
I liked when Goblin was throwing his razor bats around. Three of them stabbed into his freaking back. The Tombstone's back. I first saw that, I was like, whoa!
And then Tombstone looks like, really? This is how we're gonna play it? Yeah. That's definitely a badass moment right there for Tombie.
Yeah, it's good stuff. The fight. I think all the fights in this episode are pretty top notch.
I mean, the thing about this entire episode, considering what we're about to talk about, it just feels like they packed this episode with so much in it.
They seriously did, yeah.
And really, when you differentiate what's part of what, they really didn't, but they're just, you know,
There's a bet, there's Harry's storyline, there's the Bugle, there's the, like, the Mafia storyline, there's the business side of it. There legitimately is, like, a ton of stuff, but to me, it all felt like, I really love the Bugle subplot. I thought that was a great idea. I thought that was a great addition and not a subtraction to the main storyline, yeah. And it comes out later in the characters.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a little bit. I do like how the fights broke up into two parts. You have the fight inside the refinery, to which Toomey gets a hammerhead, and they escape, and so then it's just Peter and the Goblin. And that, it's a very interesting fight that's unique from it to itself. It's very different from the fight they had the first time they met.
It's a little more personal because Goblin's like, why don't you just give up? And Peter says something, I forget this. But yeah, I really like it because, specifically because, the scene where he like sticks Spider-Man with like globby stuff and like is following him around is a direct reference to the classic, Amazing Spider-Man issue 39, John Romita Sr. cover, where at the end of that issue, you find out who the Goblin is. The references are all abound in this episode, and I thought that was a really cool way to do it.
And we'll be getting to one of those references in a little bit. But of course, at the end of the fight, Spidey chases Gobbly down back to the Osborn apartment to where we get our surprise, which is our second talk point, was the resolution to the Goblin mystery, which is really I don't want to say predominated. Yeah, it has. It's predominated this arc. Has been this Goblin, who's the Green Goblin. And it is really shocking to for it to be Harry Osborn, because really Harry Osborn, it looked like it was too obvious of a red herring. So that's why we thought it was either going to be Sally or Norman.
Yeah, that's why. Well, I was going to ask you, like, when you first saw this back in 2008, what did, like, and he took his mask off and it turned out to be Harry. What did you think?
I think I was like everybody else. We were honestly surprised because we thought it was too obvious of a red herring. And again, we were left wondering, well, if this series continues, will Norman take up the Goblin Crown for some reason? But
Norman's a good guy. He can't.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, for what it is, yeah, it was very surprising.
I'm not gonna front. Honestly, I wasn't surprised only because, like, I'm not trying to, like, make myself sound smart or anything, but to me, I thought that the whole Harry thing was so big of a red herring that it was too obvious of a red herring. So I kind of expected it. I just kind of wanted to see how they would explain their way around it. And I love Spider-Man's reaction because he's like, this makes no sense. And they kind of explained it around it. So I thought that was really good. And I loved how James Arnold Taylor just keeps on going back and forth with his sanity. He's like, you know, his Norman's like, why would you just do something so stupid? And then Harry just, like, bugs out and, like, grabs, he's like kind of snaps his wrist. He's like, you want me to be a man, right? I thought that was awesome. That's good stuff.
Yeah, Jason Arnold Taylor did a great job in this episode with his Harry lines. Yeah, you know, for those of us who've known about Jason Arnold Taylor before, we know he's a great actor. So, what was that?
James Arnold Taylor.
Oh, I'm sorry, James. I'm sorry.
Apologize to no one because at this point, no one.
It's one of those nights, folks.
It's true. What did you think about whole Norman's explanation? Oh, well, clearly Harry wasn't overheard Hammerhead talking to me, so he took it upon himself to become the Green Goblin. Like, were you like, or were you like, nah, that can't be true?
Well, to be honest, they showed us that.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I mean, they did show us Harry overhearing that one conversation between Hammerhead and Norman Osborn, if you think a couple episodes back.
No, I know that. I mean, they do explain it. But I just remember, going back to that time when it came first, I remember a lot of people were like, yeah, right. I remember, to me, cause it is the biggest point, who is the Green Goblin and what's the deal with Harry? And both those plot points kind of merged. I was just like, cause Harry, to me, I don't know, he's one of those characters that people go back and forth on, or is he a good guy, or is he not a good guy? And to me, him taking the globulin green, just accentuated, especially how he's acting with Peter. He was so standoffish to Peter, like, the entire time, like, these past three episodes, like, after he talks to Gwen in the locker, or in the hallway, he just, like, brushed past Peter. He's really cynical with him, he's talking to him on the phone, and it's like, I don't think, to me, it wasn't a surprise, but I'm not 100% sure Harry's all that great a guy. I'm not saying he's all out and out evil, but I think this is a hint of, like, the kind of person he turns out to be.
Well, obviously, it was the influence of the Goblin Green formula, which, if when Norman first sees it during the reveal, you know, he talks about how it's a highly experimental formula that's highly addictive.
Exactly.
But speaking of the Goblin Green formula, that is a very good segue into our third point, which is the interaction between Peter, Gwen, and Harry in this episode, which you sort of already got into. And also how it sort of mimics a very, very famous storyline from the Spider-Man comics.
Amazing Spider-Man 97, 98, and 99, I believe. Let me check on that real quick. It's right next to me, so let me just pull this out.
Because you're not Petroni.
Well, yeah, I don't BitTorrent. It is 96 to 98.
You can't just pop it off the poppet head and also tell us, you know, where Peter went to lunch and how he had his hamburger if it had any jalapenos on it.
I'm only playing like JR. Thomas. I'm not the guy.
Or Bertone.
JR or Bertone, honestly. Yes, it was ASM 96 to 98, and famously, we should probably mention how that was very famous in the comic book history because it was at a time where drugs were not put out in comic books, and Sam was like, hey, I'm going to do it anyway to show how bad drugs are, and comic code of authority said, well, we can't let you do that. And Stanley said, well, hey, I'm going to do it anyway. So for those three issues, they ran without the code of authority. And they got a lot of applause for that.
I mean, for me, when I look back at the history, I'm like, that's the point where everybody should know that Stan Lee is probably one of the greatest comic book writers that ever wrote. Because, you know, he stood up there, he stood up against the McCarthyistic communist comic book. Well, that's what they are! I'm not, as far as I'm concerned, that's what they are. They are McCarthyist, they were created out of the McCarthyism era, and they're, I mean, they were very anti-free speech to an extent, was the comic book authority. I mean, you gotta remember what the comic book authority was, came out of. It came out of the McCarthyism, and it came out of the,
No. Dude, seriously, I did a paper on this. The Comic Code of Authority was a response to the Senate hearings that were brought on by Frederick Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent. They were done.
Yes.
Not to stamp out free speech, but to censor comic books so comic books would stay in publication and be safe for children to buy. That's,
and well, it has nothing out
to do with Joe McCarthy. Well,
but it does, because the whole Seduction of the Innocents came out of a lot of different things that came out of McCarthyism. From the crackdown upon people by claiming, oh, this is communistic.
It's more along the lines of him looking at Batman and Robin and saying, oh, wow, Batman and Robin are so gay. Which they aren't. But it was, I agree with you to a certain extent. It was looking too closely and seeing things that weren't there. I don't think it was had anything to do with McCarthyism whatsoever.
But the point is that, yeah, they looked at it, they said that, and then said, oh, and if you read it, you're a communist. That stuff was going... That stuff was going on.
Well, we shall agree to disagree, I would have said. I think that, well, basically what we're saying is like how Gussie Stanley was to do this kind of story.
I mean, we're disagreeing on points about why we agree why Stanley is so freaking awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and it was great that it sort of, I don't want to say parodied, but it was very influenced by a storyline which also sort of influenced another favorite Spider-Man storyline of mine, Sin's Pass. But we're not going to get into that. If you remember, basically the whole reason for, I can't remember whether they spent their night together or whether it was after she came back. It was because took place. Yeah, it was when she, after they had their night and she was pregnant and she came back from Paris, was when Harry was having one of his relapses.
Right.
And so, if you remember in Sin's Past, you know, she's telling Norman, you will never see the kids as I have parental rights to it. So.
It's also worth mentioning that in the original comic she went to London, but then JMS retconned it to Paris. But hey, whatever.
Why do you have to ruin everything for me?
Just because it's fun and it makes for good listening.
Yeah, I bet it does. But the but back to the point we were probably originally supposed to try to make. Yeah, Peter and Gwen and Harry, you know, Harry comes very standoffish against Peter and Gwen, and it.
Well, elaborate that a little bit more.
Well, you know, he's blowing him off like, hey, like why? So you know where Peter's calling him and he's saying, yeah, right. So you could give me an earful for Gwen Stacy? Right. Man. I'll meet you at the Halloween party.
And he's totally, oh man. And I kind of feel bad for Gwen because I don't think she ever really knew what was going on. Like, she kind of did, but, to me, I kind of felt like she just was playing catch up. And that is kind of like her role as a supporting character. But, like, Harry's one of her closest friends and she kind of like said, oh, he's drinking this mysterious vial. And then, now he's gone the next day. So she really had no idea. I mean, obviously she thought he was getting help, but, she didn't know that happened. I kind of felt bad that, cause in the very next few episodes, you know, Peter's going to go through some changes and she's going to be left, you know, without much anybody besides, everybody's baby Mary Jane. We'll get into that.
Yeah. And of course you had that sad moment at the end where sort of the breakup of the original three and sort of the introduction of the new three with it being Gwen, Peter, and MJ. And even though I would like to sit here and say that I think Peter's better off with this deal, because I know I'd rather have two female friends than a male friend.
I will say I love that shot of him and Mary Jane kind of like looking down on the same side of, I think it was like a fountain or something or a seat.
Yeah.
I really do love that shot. I think it's really cool.
Did you sort of catch that Mary Jane, you know, she He says, yeah, I know you disappeared. And it was sort of like, yeah. I
she said, almost you disappeared as usual.
Yeah.
I'm sure that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm sure it doesn't mean anything. It's not like she could know that he's Spider-Man.
Don't be foolish. I was actually kind of thinking if there was any meaning towards her being a vampire. I guess, I mean, I know somebody who doesn't like Mary Jane said, well, she's a blessing because she was married. But, I guess it's something to, just a cute costume for her to wear.
We already talked about our fourth point, because I can talk again, the Halloween party to an extent. I mean, is there really anything to add about the Halloween party that you can think of?
We got the information that Rand thinks of, John Jameson as an older brother, which goes back to how long, Jonah and Joe Robertson probably worked together, which is, I think it's a very interesting dynamic that they kind of, I really don't think that's in the comics, but I welcome it because it feels like a more complete universe to me. So I really like
and that. That really feels like it fits with our final talk. Well, not our final talking, but we have one more after it, but our fifth talking point, the space shuttle plot, which was really, for all everything that it was, it's really all set up for the next arc.
It is, yeah, and I liked it. I really liked it. I loved every scene J.J. Jameson was in because he was worried, he was relieved, and then he didn't want to let his workers show it, and he wasn't wrong. By all rights, you know, Roger's son who saved people's lives and got back to Earth on time, got back to Earth safe and sound. And when the reading public don't want to, would rather know more about Spider-Man, then it must be just like a kick in the groin to the guy because he's like, you know, yeah. Get that
trigger. You saw the many faces of John James.
That guy.
Which,
and not Walter, but J. Jonah James.
Yeah. Let's not confuse the two. One makes sense, and then there's Walter.
I want
him. Walter's a friend. But yeah, it definitely felt, and you know what, it didn't have to be in this episode. That's the thing about the space shuttle plot. It didn't have to be, but it was. And that just shows the length that Greg Wiseman and his crew went to putting out a very detailed story, and that's why I like it so much.
Yeah. You got some character bits from, apparently, Ned Lee's a bit of a jerk because, you know, like, they're talking about, like, oh, when the shuttle comes back, and he's like whispering to Betty, if the shuttle comes back. Like, it's like, oh yeah, he's probably gonna die. Like, wow. He should not be working. If Jameson heard you working there, A, he kicked your ass, and B, he probably fired you.
Yeah. Well, let's go on to our final talking point. If you remember earlier in the episode, as you're listening to this, of course, I'm saying this knowing that I'm gonna do this in post-production, you heard, I bleeped out a name earlier in this episode, that Don said. That being that, during the Halloween party, we had like a little 5-second introduction to a character who we'll be talking a lot about next episode.
You mean the Black Cat?
Black! I hate you. That was supposed to be my moment, and you stole it! You stole my Black Cat from me!
If I could, I'd steal the Black Cat from you all the time.
I hate you so
if
much.
If you know what I'm saying.
That's not what she said. But moving on. No, but technically we have our introduction to Black Cat. We'll be going more into her character next episode. Trust me, we can't wait.
Oh God, yes, I can see it now.
but I'm also going to let you know this. Next episode may be an extra long episode because we've also, and Don and me have known about this, we've decided to wait to talk about a certain issue with comics until we get to Black Cat, that being women in comics. So we're also
going to talk about that. Okay, what did you say?
Yes, now? We are, because I told you this several times.
Oh, this
but apparently nobody listens to me.
Look forward in to the, that, as I will.
In the production meetings, apparently nobody's listening. Everybody's on their BlackBerry.
I was not reading comments.
So, but that's pretty much it. We're going to move on to our favorite lines. Do you want to start off with your favorites?
Honestly, man, you can start off because I don't remember that much. So you give yours, and I'll see if I can think of them.
Well, I really thought I could remember three. Of course, the first one where Spidey sees a goblin and he catches his glider with his web gun. Whoa! I caught me a big one! then there's a little bit later in that fight, of course, before that scene, you had the scene with Tombstone and Gobbly talking, you know, where, when, da-da-da, this. And so you have sort of the same thing happening where Peter's going where and when, and Goblin goes, anyone else getting deja vu? Let's run with it. And then, of course, but my favorite definitely was one I said before. Says, so, Gobbly offered you the secret toy surprise, too? Trap. I figured. Race inside. I'm sorry, I had to see
that. That was a good one.
I mean, and those are the ones I could remember that, or at least for me, really stood out. But there were some very good lines. I mean, it's not like the epic six that we had last episode.
Oh, yeah.
So, pretty much that's it. So, what's your rating for this episode, Don?
Real quick, I kind of like the line where he saves his butt by, like, doing that web ball and lands, and when Goblin tries to get away, he starts webbing at him. He's like, oh, yeah. Kind of use it all up, didn't I? I kind of like that. But,
oh, I thought you were going to say the whole thing where he says, okay, I know this is real because I can feel pain.
All this pain. At least it makes me know I'm still alive. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
ratings. I will give this a... You know what? I think I'm going to go down slightly from what I originally reviewed it. And I'm gonna give us a 4.5 out of 5. I mean, I really do like it. I think the animation, while good, has been better and will be better. So I'll give us I still really enjoyed it. So 4.5.
Well, you know, I'm gonna give it a 5 out of 5. I actually think this is one of the first times I think we've actually disagreed on a rating system. That's actually, not probably not. But the thing, I could bring up the extra counter that is, I was talking with my good friend Jesse, my co-host on Tokyo SOS.
SOS.
And we were sort of, but we were talking about how, you know, how the difference a story can make. And in this episode, you had a really good story. And a really good story can bring you into a universe and make you sometimes miss slip-ups and things like animation or secret effect, or special effects, excuse me. Just like, if a movie has a bad story, it can totally take you out of the movie and make you notice every little flaw that happens. And so with this one, I was so involved in the story that if there were mistakes with animation, I didn't notice it. So 5 out of 5 for me.
There you go. Well, it is a great episode. I'm not denying that whatsoever.
So, of course, we have our other podcasts. As I said before, I have the Tokyo SOS podcast.
Really?
A Godzilla review podcast, which I do with my friend Jesse Garrett. We are reviewing every Godzilla movie ever made, and actually we're going off the normal schedule. This month normally we would have done Godzilla vs. King Kong, but we actually moved it back a month, so we're actually be doing the 1998 Godzilla movie, as we will have our special guest, Scott H. Gardner from 22 Freaks, joining us.
Nice. Very nice.
And so you're, and Don has another Spider-Man podcast. Want to say that, Don?
Oh, yeah, because I love the guy. Yes, myself, John Wilson, and Gertoni, our former guest, we do this show called Amazing Spider-Man Classics. It is basically, we look at from the very beginning, from Amazing Fantasy 15, to every appearance since that Stan Lee's Spider-Man showed up, and we're having a ton of fun, so check that out.
Yes, and of course, we also have our friends, so we will pimp them now, as we always do. You have Brad Douglas in the Spider-Man Crawlspace and the Spider-Man Crawlspace podcast, Michael Bailey, who's on the Spider-Man Crawlspace podcast, and his Muse from the Long Box. He actually just came up with an episode, as of this recording, talking about Clone Saga. The Shaft podcast, which premieres at least every Wednesday, at www.animeshaft.com. I also have content for that, Thomas's Prerogative.
Yes, he does. I recommend it.
Don is a huge fan.
Yes, I am.
Yet he won't leave comments.
I'm a busy guy. I'll try to leave for next time.
Major Spoilers and the Critical Hit Podcast, which are part of the same thing, which you can find at www.majorspoilers.com. Also for Spider-Man and the Views from All About Podcast, Spider-Man Crawl Space is at www.spidermancrawlspace.com, and Views is at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. The Clone Saga Chronicles, which you can find at www.clonesagachronicles.podcast.com.
Which me and Josh are also a part of.
Yes, you are in a couple episodes. Barbara Gordon to Oracle, a Batgirl Chronicles podcast, done by our good friend Spider-Girl. I hope I said that right. The UAL is escaping me. The Kaiju Cast, another Godzilla podcast, to my good friend Kyle, which you can find at www.kaijucast.com. That's KAIJU cast. KaijuCast.com. The Nostalgia Critic, which you can find at www.thatguywithglasses.com. And the 22 Freaks, which you can find at 22freaks.com. And the 2-in-1 Showcase, which you can find at the 2-in-1 Showcase.lipson.com. So those are our friends. Go check them out. And that's it for this episode of the Spectacular Web Podcast, episode 9.
I'll tell you right now, you are going to, yes, next month.
You're going to do your little purr. Black Cat. Oh, yeah.
Giggity, giggity. Totally nude.
Giggity, giggity. Giggity, goo. So until next time, Spider-Man fans, stay spectacular.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No!
Can I get your ship on?
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
F*** Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.